Welcome, everyone. My name is Mike Verbsky, and you are listening to Limitless. This podcast is brought to you by the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. And good evening, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Limitless. My name is Mike. I'm here once again to host your podcast. And this evening, kind of taking off on a few other of the podcast episodes we've done in the past where we've come up on new topics and conversations to dive deeper into. Tonight, I have Sarah Marshall here with us. She is with Travel Able Accessibility Travel Options. And welcome, Sarah, to Limitless.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Sarah, let's start off with, you know, I've traveled for years, and we used to, as kids and growing up, always we went to the travel agent and we made our plans. But what sets Travel Able aside? What makes Travel Able different compared to my going online and just simply booking a trip or going to a travel?
Well, Travel Able definitely prides ourselves in customizing a unique itinerary to the client. As you probably know, accessibility means something different to everybody. What's accessible for one person might not be accessible for another. And so the term accessible is sort of loosely defined. And so we get to know our client. We ask a lot of questions. We have some discussions. And then we build a plan that's accessible to that client. And that's a wholly different than just booking online and not really having that support. Now, the second thing that sort of sets us apart is that we do provide support the whole journey. So even if our clients are traveling and they have a mishap or they need medical attention or the driver didn't show up, we're on the phone with them any time of day or night while they're traveling.
Well, that's wonderful. That's a great service to have, because I'm sure it's come up where somebody who has special needs or different needs in another country or even within the United States, finding those support services can be a challenge.
Definitely. And we can't support in every single situation. A lot of it is managing expectations and a lot of it is coaching on how to find the solutions locally, wherever they are. But yeah, we're always available while they're traveling, just in case there's something that goes wrong.
And if someone comes to you and has a crazy idea for a trip, whatever that may be, is there a limitation as far as where they can go?
You know what? That's a great question. There, I like to say there's no limits. You know, we say that we design limitless vacation. And honestly, if they want to go someplace super crazy, out of the way, in the middle of nowhere, we can make that happen. But we do a lot of managing of expectations. And I'll give you an example. I had clients that really wanted to take their elderly parents to China to visit their heritage and things like that. And both of their elderly parents were wheelchair users, and neither of them terribly mobile, couldn't transfer, needed a lot of assistance. And I said, okay, you can go to China, but let's put this into perspective. You're in a restaurant and you go to the restroom and it's an Asian toilet where you have to squat. Who's going to help your mother get into that position? Who's going to help them, you know, actually go to the bathroom and all that kind of thing? And she was like, oh, you're right. You know, I didn't think about that. It might be a deal breaker. And that doesn't mean she can't go to China. It just means there are extra considerations that she needs to think about. We offer solutions like providing names of traveling nurses or caregivers, respite caregivers within the country, if we can find them. We can't hire them, but we can certainly provide you those resources. And then, you know, in the end, she said, well, where can I get a Chinese experience with more accessibility? And the easy answer to that is Singapore. Singapore has a lot of Chinese influence, but is one of the most accessible countries, if not just in Asia, in the world. So they have a real commitment to making everything accessible and inclusive. And so we weighed it that way. Again, not saying she can't go to China, just saying if she's going to go to China, she needs to manage her expectations. Similarly, I had a client who booked a trip to Egypt. She had booked it without me. And so I asked her for feedback at the end, and she mentioned that you know, while the cruise ship, they took a Nile cruise, and while the cruise ship was accessible, when they got off the cruise ship, accessibility meant they had four burly Egyptian guys carrying her up and down the stairs in her wheelchair. Well, that's not an experience that everybody wants to have. So while it is on paper accessible, it's something that we talk about with our clients to make sure they're comfortable with that. If they're not comfortable with that, then we have to find some other solution. But if they are comfortable with that, it you know, it makes for an interesting trip, because then you can go places that you might not have thought you could go.
And are these things that sounds when helping people book these trips, are these things that found that are cultural differences that people need to be aware of, or is it more of a logistics issue in terms of getting around the different cities, getting around these countries, or a combination?
I mean, I think it's both. I think it's, yeah, definitely a combination. So in some countries, it can be cultural in that their disabled communities are isolated, or they don't include them as much as they would in, for instance, the United States, or something that we're, where we're pushing more inclusion. And so they just haven't thought about the fact that, you know, a wheelchair accessible ramp needs to be at a certain incline for people to actually be able to get up it safely. You know, they say, well, we'll put a ramp, and then it's not, you can't even use it because it's so steep. There's that cultural difference. A lot of countries, you know, we were in Vietnam last month. Vietnam has a law that every new building has to have, you know, has to be built into an accessible fashion. But that doesn't mean that the old buildings are made into that way. So for instance, if you're really into history and you want to go to, you know, historical sites, there's a lot of countries, they protect those by, you know, not changing them, not adapting them. So, you know, it's very difficult to get to those places. There are some, like, for instance, I'm getting ready to highlight an experience searching for gorillas in Uganda that can be made accessible, but it's in a jungle. It's very difficult to make accessible a jungle where you don't want to change the environment because you want that authentic experience, but you also, you don't want to harm the habitat of the gorillas. And so they have, you know, like, I don't even know what it's called, but it's a carry wagon where you're basically like an Egyptian prince where you're waving and people are feeding you grapes, you know, that kind of thing. But they take you through the jungles to go see the gorillas. So, you know, I think it's just in general, you know, sort of a mix of, you know, what is the country offering? What kind of laws do they have in place? What are their views on disability? And then, you know, can they, is it feasible to make these things accessible? That kind of thing.
And then I would imagine that, you know, depending on the disability or the circumstances that someone's actually dealing with, that in turn may help kind of steer that trip.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, I'm never going to tell somebody they can't do something. I just tell them what the expectations are and see if they have ideas or if they want to go forward with it or if they don't want to go forward with it. It's really up to them and their comfort level. But we provide all the information so that they can make an informed decision.
That's awesome. When you start kind of helping them to plan these trips and have the conversations as far as how you're going to get there. So in terms of air travel, what are things that people really need to know to make their lives as easy as possible to navigate through the airport?
Also a great question, because I will say that airports, air flying, air transport is the one thing in this business I cannot control. And so there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts when it comes to air travel. But I have a few tips of the trade, if you will. The first thing is you should always call. There's a number online for TSA Cares, and I can make it available to your listeners maybe in the comments of the podcast. It now has an online form as well. TSA Cares is a program of TSA where they allot you your own TSA agent to take you through security. And it can be really helpful because a lot of times we travel with medical equipment, or perhaps people travel with oxygen or other breathing apparatus. And there's just so much of it. And going through a regular security line can make you feel rushed. It can make you feel like you're a burden. So We like using TSA cares because they allot you your own security line. So you can go through as leisurely as you need. They don't require you to stand up to have a body search, especially if that's uncomfortable for you. And then they can ask any questions about, for instance, medications or liquids that you need to bring on board without holding up a whole line of people. And I love that. I use it all the time for my client.
Yeah, that's a great service right there. That's very cool.
Yeah. It's better. I will say it's better in the bigger airports than in the smaller regional ones. But we, you know, one of the things that once you fill out the form, TSA actually alerts all of the agents on your routing. So if you're going from like JFK to Asheville, North Carolina, they're going to alert both Asheville and JFK. So it will hopefully be in place for you in both directions, even though JFK is a much larger airport than Asheville. So that's number one. Number two is understanding how the airlines work. You know, a lot of airlines, they don't have control over things like when you're going to board the plane and how you're going to board the plane. It's a mixture of personnel from the airport itself, personnel from the airplane, you know, that works for Delta, let's say, or United, and then people that sort of own that space in between. And so in order to make sure that everybody's on the same page, one of the things that we do is we add fare codes to the airplane booking when you have a wheelchair, when you have someone with a developmental disability, when you have someone that is blind, someone who's traveling with a service dog. All of those have different fare codes. And when you add that fare code to your booking, to your airfare booking, it alerts everybody in the path of your travel that you are traveling with consideration. So what, you know, a lot of airlines, Southwest, for instance, is coming to mind, have a form you can fill out where you tell them exactly what it is you need. They add the fare codes on the back end. For our clients, a lot of times we call the airline ahead of time and give them the fare codes to add so that we make sure that everybody's in the same page. You can call, every airline has an access department. You can call the access department, you know, the minute you make the booking and tell them what you need, and they make sure that they add it, make sure they also make sure that the plane is the right size to fit your wheelchair. So for instance, if you're a wheelchair user and you need to stow it under the plane, not every airplane has a large enough baggage bin to stow that. So they will reroute you on a better plane if that's what's necessary. You know, there's little things like that you didn't realize, but if you ask somebody, if you talk to them, they'll make you aware of that and they'll help you out. They do reserve certain seats for those with mobility issues. So you can call ahead of time and say, you know, I'm a wheelchair user, or I have mobility issues and I need this kind of seat, and they will make that happen if they can. Obviously not, you know, don't call them asking for a business class upgrade, but you know, if you need an aisle versus a window, or if you need to be closer to the restroom versus farther away from the restroom, whatever it is, they can make that happen. So those are my two big tips, I think, for airline travel. And it's just having a sense of patience, because as I said, you know, there's so many people involved in the process, and it's really hard. You know, you can't, not one person can control the entire thing. So it's having patience and understanding the rules and just putting on a good face and making sure that you're being direct with them as to what you need and little things like that.
And I think definitely, you know, pre-planning as much as possible, it can only benefit you. I mean, they tell us now, you know, even if you don't have special considerations that you need when you're traveling, you know, to make sure that the medications you definitely need are in your carry-on. Sure.
Right.
You know, things that you need are, you're upfront about, you know, the TSA agent, they're not there to mess you up with your medicine. They're not there to mess you
right.
up with your care and what you need. But if you, you know, all of a sudden at the last second, you know, pull out a bag of needles, you're going to raise a few eyebrows.
Right, right. And the other thing is, you know, always carry with you some sort of doctor's note. And this is just standard practice, yes. Even if you're not taking an airplane, but you're taking, you know, a car. Always carry with you some form of notification from the doctor as to what medications you're on, or if you have, for instance, like my son had a G tube for a long time, And so we would bring his blenderized diet with us on the plane. So we needed, because he was older than a standard infant, we needed a note from his doctor explaining that he's tube fed and he requires this blenderized diet. So, you know, always carry that with you on the off chance that you get a really grumpy TSA agent. I mean, we're all human, right? So somebody's right. Going to be having a bad day, and you're going to want, you know, you're going to want it, your patients, and then you're also going to want documentation so that, you know, they know you're not trying to pull one over on them. Yeah. And the other thing I forgot to mention here, when you mentioned pre-planning, is knowing your limits for air travel. So if someone is new to the disability community and they haven't done air travel, I am not going to suggest a 14-hour flight, because they're not going to understand their limits for being able to be on that plane. So, like, I have a lot of clients that say, you know, I can't go longer than 8 hours. So we'll break it up. So perhaps they fly to the West Coast, they take a break like overnight, and then they fly the remainder of the distance. Or, you know, you get them lounge upgrades so that they have places to rest where they can take a break before they get on the next leg. You know, little things like that is important to understand, because, you know, you don't want your first flight out the gate to be like a 24-hour flight to Australia. You know, you want to make sure that you understand what all your limits are. And then as you get more comfortable, then we can discuss longer and longer journeys.
Definitely. And that's good advice anyway. We just came back from Israel, and we hadn't been on a plane in a few years with COVID and everything else. But otherwise, you know, the longest flight we had brought our kids on was New York to Disney World.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're going, yeah, no, 12 hours. No problem. We rolled the dice a little bit on that one, but
yeah,
with enough movies and TV that the time sort of goes quick.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. For my younger clients, I always like to prepare a gift pack that they open on the plane that's got crayons and a coloring book or something to read, you know, depending on their age, or a fidget toy, or, you know, something so that they get excited about getting on the plane. And then the parents can pull it out when they're pulling their hair out. They can pull out the gift bag.
Yes. When folks are saying, we want to go and cruise, we want to, you know, whether it's, you know, one of the cruise lines down to the Caribbean, or, you know, any of the Mediterranean cruises, what are the things that they should be looking for, that they should be asking for in terms of making those travel?
Well, so cruise lines come in all flavors, all sizes. And so the first thing is to understand what kind of experience you want to have on that cruise. So some people want a quieter cruise where there's no screaming children running around, and there are more luxurious amenities, let's say, or perhaps there's somebody on board that's in charge of talking about the nature or talking about the history. And then you have people that want to party, or they want the cheapest, you know, they just want to take their entire family, and they want, the kids want water slides, and the adults want, you know, casinos and things like that. And so the first way that we sort of narrow down what cruise line to pick is by understanding what experience you want on that cruise. Then we look at destination, because sometimes we have difficulty with the ports being accessible. So the ship might be accessible, but the ports might not be. There are two different kinds of ports when you're cruising. There's the standard port where you actually pull into it, or the ship actually pulls into a dock and you're let out onto the dock via a ramp. And then there's tendered ports. And tendered ports are ones where the cruise ship remains out at sea in a harbor of sorts or a bay. And you have to take a tender boat into the port itself. Some cruise ships travel with their own tender boats and some do not. And so the cruise ships that travel with their own tender boats, if we know that they're wheelchair accessible, then we know you can get on it. But if the tender boats are not provided by the cruise ship, but are provided by the port, they're often not accessible. The cruise ship won't actually let you get on it. And so you can't actually go see that port. And so we want to make sure that there's a balance, again, setting expectations that if, for instance, most tendered ports are going to be in the Mediterranean, or sometimes in Alaska, because those ports are the smallest and they're the ones that have the most activity. So when somebody wants to have that kind of experience, then we look at ahead of time, we look at the tendered ports versus the standard ports and we decide, okay, are you comfortable if you can't get off the ship in this location? Are you okay with that? If not, then we need to find another line where it's not a tender port, but perhaps they have special permission to dock, something like that. The other thing is, you can't plan excursions at a tendered port because if they won't let you off the ship and you can't cancel it, then you'll be upset. So a lot of times what I suggest is if it's a tendered port, but for some reason you actually get a dock berth or you can get off the ship, a lot of times when you get off the ship, you'll meet somebody in the town who will say, hey, I'll take you in your wheelchair up the hill, you know, to the castle or whatever, for this much money. And you can decide if that's something you want to do. I had clients that went on an Italy cruise and they had tendered at one port, but they were able to get off because the ship got a dock berth at the last second. And so they got off the ship and there was somebody there and who said, yeah, I'll take you in your wheelchair up. There's a huge hill up the hill that was an affordable price. He seemed like a good guy. He ended up being their favorite tour guide of the entire trip. And they got his phone number for me so I could use him in the future. But basically, you know, you never know when something like that might happen. You could also, a lot of the tendered ports, the promenade along the sea is flat. So even if you can't, for instance, go up the hill to the castle, you might be able to walk along the promenade, have lunch, just get off the ship, have a little bit of a change of scenery. So again, it's setting those expectations. And then once we have all that information, then, you know, then you can decide on a cruise line. Some cruise lines, obviously, the ships are going to be huge. Some are going to be small. The smaller ones, the river vessels, tend not to have accessible cabins on them. So if you're a client that requires a roll-in shower or a shower bench, river cruises are going to be a lot more difficult than ocean cruises. You know, so there's a lot of consideration in that regard. And there's a lot of information out there that's conflicting. So, you know, you just want to make sure that you talk to somebody that's knowledgeable about it to make sure that they're picking the right cruise line. But once you've picked the right cruise line, once you've booked it, cruise lines, I'm going to say in general, have a lot of processes in place to make sure that accessible travelers are comfortable, whether that be transfers to and from the airport, persons to assist them getting from their cabin to their dining hall or, you know, whatnot. Everything on the ship is accessible. So it's just, yeah, it's really figuring out what kind of experience you want to have, how big of a ship you want to have, what routing has the most things that you want to see. And then once you book it, then it's just contacting people and making sure that everything is set up for you.
Is there a similar sort of service or availability of service like with the TSA cares that people can to access additional services while on some of these cruise lines?
It's a great question. I am not familiar with one. Each cruise line has their own processes. So the goodness of each cruise line and their ability to accommodate is just something that's sort of learned. And again, just like the airlines, every cruise line has an accessibility desk. And those accessibility desks are responsible for ensuring that persons that have made known that they require accommodations, accessibility accommodations, are noted, that everybody's aware that the accommodations are set up properly. The one thing I will say is for cruise lines specifically, there are a number of companies that will rent equipment. So cruise lines, for instance, if you use oxygen, cruise lines don't allow you to bring a certain amount of oxygen. Most cruise lines will have a doctor on board, but they don't stock, for instance, oxygen canisters or anything like that. So you can have them rented and they'll be delivered directly to the ship. There are many companies like that, special needs group, or they're called special needs at sea. That's one of them. Scoot Around is another one we use frequently. If, for instance, if you're ambulatory, but you'd like an electric scooter to get around the dock and the decks of the ship, or perhaps you have an excursion where you want an electric scooter, you can rent those and have them delivered to the ship. So there's just a variety of services that are available from different providers. But this accessibility on the ship specifically is controlled by the cruise line.
And then after that, it would be, again, like we were talking earlier, it would be more a relation of, you know, which country you were cruising in as far as when you leave the cruise ship. And
correct,
what accessibility you may or may not have available to you based on the way that country handles.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, the cruise lines, they have levels of accessibility. I don't know that they're accurate, but they'll say, okay, these excursions obviously being when you get off the ship to tour, these excursions are accessible at this level. These excursions are accessible at this level. If we can't find cruise ship excursions that are accessible to the level you're comfortable at, we have on the ground providers in most countries that do that focus on accessible travel. So they know, you know, how to make a tour accessible. And so we'll go that route instead. But again, these are conversations we have with the clients. What are they comfortable with? What budget do they have? What money do they want to spend? How important is getting off at one port versus another? And every cruise line is different. You know, if one cruise line is a tendered port in, let's say, Ketchikan, Alaska, that doesn't mean that every cruise line is tendered at Ketchikan. We can find one that isn't, you know. Right. So if you absolutely have to get off the ship at Ketchikan, Alaska, we just have to find the routing where it's not tendered, you know, little things like that.
Well, I want to tell you, I have to get off in Ketchikan because when we were there in 2000, whatever year that was, they had a salmon chowder right there on the dock that would have made. So
I'm excited. So I'm going on my first Alaska cruise next summer. So I'm very
excited. Nice.
But I have a lot of clients doing Alaska. I have Alaska on the brains. I have many clients doing it this summer and wanting to stop in Ketchikan, not necessarily for the salmon chowder, although I will give them that recommendation. But they want to because of those shows. What are they? Big Catch or, you know, the salmon fishing shows that they have Discovery Channel.
Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, that's what it is. Deadliest Catch. That they have a Deadliest Catch tour, apparently. And so clients are very interested in going on that tour. So
yeah, that was the vacation my wife and I took before we had kids, because we figured, where should we go that you would never really want to travel with small children? Alaska was the one that came to the top of that list. But actually, it's interesting because now I sit down and look back as we were in one of these ports and somebody wanted to, you know, get off the cruise ship. And the problem was the size of the cruise ship and where the dock was and the ramp to get off the ship. That was steep.
Yeah.
And that was one of those that they needed, you know, four crew members to help control the speed of the wheelchair as they were coming on and off the ship, because it was a little dicey, at least.
Unfortunately, the cruise lines are pretty expert in that. So even if it requires several crew members, they will make sure that those crew members are there and ready for you when you get off. But yeah, the tendered ports can be an issue because, you know, just getting on and off the ship, the little tender boat can be dicey for anybody, really. So.
I'm sure I could follow.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's going to fall in the water, it's going to be me. I fall off of every boat we've ever been on. So it would be like, yeah, that would be me.
As people are traveling around and they, you know, whether it's going into historical sites or national parks, what are some of the things that they need to be aware of as they're maneuvering around some areas?
Historic sites, national parks. If you're in the United States, obviously those are going to follow ADA regulation. They, you know, a lot of their websites have on it trail maps where the trails are what they would consider ADA accessible and those that are not. So again, you can set your own expectations as to what trails you want to go on, what trails you don't want to go on. But across the board, they're pretty accessible. Even like Acadia in Maine, they've got accessible camping outside of the park. But, you know, you can get cabins or bungalows inside. I've had clients who wanted to go to Glacier National Park, and they stayed in an accessible cabin in West Glacier. So, you know, they're a great resource. I would also recommend that people who are interested in national parks to take advantage of the America Pass, which I believe is offered to those with disabilities for free so that they can enter any national park over the course of however long the pass is good for. And that's a definite perk, I will say, of the national park. For those that, you know, want to drive places, again, it's knowing your limits and it's understanding that you can't necessarily do the old road trip philosophy of just stopping for the night wherever you want. Because if you require a roll and shower room, or if you require accessible tub or whatnot, those rooms can get sold out from under you if you haven't pre-booked. So it's a lot of making sure that you pre-book. Excuse me. Even national parks, I will say, you know, they have lodges within them that all have accessible rooms, but those book up a year in advance. So if you want to go to the Grand Canyon, but you want to stay in the park at Bright Angel or one of those fancy lodges, you need to be booking it at least a year in advance, because they will book quickly. And then, you know, they only have one or two accessible rooms. Then if you need those rooms, you need to make sure that, you know, you're on the top of the list when it comes to making that booking. But, you know, a lot of it can be done on the fly if that's something that you're interested in. There's a lot of resources out there. Bloggers, I know if you're familiar with Corey Lee of Curb Free with Corey Lee. You know, I read his stuff all the time to get ideas. He's got a lot of interesting resources there. I've also made a friend with Lorraine Woodward, who owns Becoming Rentable. And she runs a website, it's Becoming Rentable, where vacation properties that deem themselves accessible are listed. And then she and her team actually go out to those properties and certify them based on whether or not they are legitimately accessible.
That's great.
So, yeah. And so a lot of clients I have are like, you know, I want to go to Florida for 3 months and I need a vacation rental that's accessible. And people will put on Airbnb or whatnot that something is accessible when it's really, truly not. And so my first point of reference is always Becoming Rentable, because Lorraine and her team are doing a great job, you know, vetting those properties and making sure that it's highlighted whether or not they're legitimately accessible. And so her website is becomingrentable.com, I believe. So that's a great resource as well. If you were looking for something like a vacation rental, that's a great option.
And that's great, because there are times that, you know, someone's website sends something that's not quite what you think it's going to be. So if you have somebody who's actually been out there and seen it, and then you can trust the information, hopefully, a little bit more.
Yeah. The other thing, you know, I always suggest, especially when like, you know, getting a hotel room, perhaps you're planning a trip, a road trip or something, is, you know, you can write to the concierge or the manager of the hotel and ask them for pictures of the room, for measurements from the room, things like that. Not every manager is the most accommodating, but many will, like, go. And if they're, you know, if they're banking on you coming to visit and it's a sale for them, they will take the time to go up to that room and measure, take pictures. And so a lot of times when I'm not familiar with a hotel, but I know my client wants to book it, that is the first thing I will say is, can you please send me a picture of the room? I need to see the arrangement of the grab bars. You know, I need to see the arrangement of the toilet. How high is the toilet? And they will do those measurements for you. But again, they're not going to do that for you a day before you arrive. Like, you need to be planning this out several months in advance. Our standard, we like to work with clients that are ready 6 months or earlier. But anyone later than 6 months, it becomes a real issue because things are sold out, or, you know, people aren't willing to help in that short amount of time.
And I would imagine also if you needed to get any of those special supplies, whether oxygen or shower chairs, raised toilets, if you needed to get anything, it becomes that much more difficult to get that equipment in place with a shorter window, depending on where people are traveling to.
Right. You know, I had clients that had to go to a funeral, and, you know, funerals, you can't plan 6 months in advance.
Right.
Unfortunately, it is definitely something that's very sad and needed to happen within the week. I was able to get them a recliner, like a medical recliner that allowed people to stand up from it, and oxygen delivered to their hotel within a couple days. But they paid, a significant price for that. And then when it came down to it, the hotel installed it in the wrong room. So, there wasn't there. They arrived and it was wrong. And it was, you know, we didn't have time to make it right. So, you know, that it can happen and we can handle it. It's just, you know, if you have time to plan it, you know, 6 months or more is better than six months and less.
And then, like you were saying, you know, and then also, you know, speaks to, you know, where are they traveling to? Because,
right,
you know, some places it's not so easy to get some of this equipment, or it's not customary, or, you know, whatever the case may be, as far as that countries or that location's outlook on people that have these special needs and circumstances. So that extra lead time, the more the better.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, overseas, we have, as I said, providers we've built relationships with that are doing accessible travel in their countries, meaning they know where to get all of these supplies, which is great. And that's why we use them. It's not, you're not your standard sort of mass market tour operators. And so that does come at a cost. So if our client's budget doesn't accommodate that, then we have to look elsewhere. But in the United States, you know, everything follows the ADA law. We don't really have control over tour operators that are doing accessible travel in the United States because everything is sort of quote unquote accessible. So we have to sort of bend the rules a little bit when it comes to the United States and say, okay, I really need this recliner. I really need this oxygen concentrator delivered to this tiny town in middle of Pennsylvania. The only place I can find it is someplace in Philadelphia. Okay, what's the delivery cost going to be? You know, that kind of thing. So it really is banking on sort of everybody pitching in and helping when needed, but it does come, unfortunately, at a cost. So,
you know, whenever I have a patient who's gone through limb loss and they have the prosthesis, the prosthetics with them, you know, we tell them try to, you know, plan for all the eventuality of pitching, bring all the equipment to me and any supplies. But have you had any issues with people, depending on where they're traveling to, mm-hmm. countries where, you know, something breaks and they need to, you know, a specialist, if you will, to come help them out? And how can that be managed?
I'm going to knock on wood over here that so far that hasn't happened to me. Everybody has gotten there with their chairs, their limbs, everything intact. I will say, though, that what has become an issue is ensuring that the arrangements that are made are the right size. So like, for instance, if you need an electric scooter or whatnot, that the car we rent for you can fit the electric scooter. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Right.
We often suggest that people don't travel with their equipment because of the fact that it might get damaged. So if they can, we try to rent when possible. But all, you know, the one thing we will say is get travel insurance. Travel insurance, whether it's through the travel provider, like a cruise line or something, or for a separate company like Allianz or AIG, will cover medical care in whatever country that you find yourself. And so we keep a list of, you know, decent hospitals, decent places that you can go. We don't have necessarily a list of practitioners. So for instance, if you just needed an adjustment, but you didn't need an entire, you know, doctor team on you, we don't necessarily have those resources in every place we go. But again, the tour operators that we're using, they're with you 100% of the time in whatever country you are. They're the ones that are going to have those resources if you need something. Or for instance, maybe you need a medication that's called something different in the country where you are. We can provide you like a list of, okay, well, this is what your medication is going to be called in that country. We provide our clients with, you know, here's how to call the ambulance. Here's how, you know, that kind of thing. But we make sure that you have a point of contact wherever you're going in that place so that you don't, you know, if you can't get a hold of me or I don't know where it is, that you have somebody local that can say, let me come get you. I'll take you to the guy that can help you. But in order to get that covered, you're going to want to have travel insurance to make sure that those medical expenses, because there'll be what are called self-pay, they'll be out of pocket. So you'll want to make sure that you have that travel insurance to help you pay off some of those medical bills, depending.
Absolutely. That's great advice anyway, especially in this day and travel, to make sure that the travel insurance is there, because you never know.
Yeah. And some people say, well, I don't want travel insurance because I'm not going to cancel my trip. It doesn't also cancel cancellation. It covers medical evacuation. So for instance, I know of somebody who was on a cruise ship, got appendicitis, had to be airlifted off the cruise ship to somewhere in Mexico to have her appendix taken out. Mm-hmm. All of that costs money that you have to pay. Your American insurance is not going to pay for it, or they'll pay for it after the fact, but it has to come out of your pocket. Well, you have a number when you buy travel insurance, you have a number that you can call that will pay, set up direct billing so that the insurance company ends up taking the brunt of it and you don't have to worry about it. Repatriation. So if you get seriously hurt in a country and you need to be repatriated back to the United States, but you have to have, you know, on an air ambulance or something like that, it covers that. It covers hospitalization. It covers a whole bunch of things. It also covers baggage damage. So if you stow your wheelchair under the plane and it gets damaged, your travel insurance will cover any repairs. We have a company that we work with that will do global wheelchair repairs. So wherever you are, they'll come out and repair your wheelchair, but it costs. So your insurance can cover that. Before you can get reimbursement from the airline, you could have it fixed and paid for, you know, by these other companies. So it's just, it, you know, travel insurance gets a bad rap, but I recommend it for all my clients.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a little bit of peace of mind, especially if you're far from home.
Yeah. And you never know when something's going to happen. You might think, oh, no, nothing will ever happen to me. And then you trip and fall and something hurts and you need a, you know, you have to go to the doctor. And then all of a sudden it's like, why didn't you get travel insurance? Now you owe all this money and then you have to pay it.
As we're kind of coming toward the end of our conversation, I always ask our guests for that gold standard, that one piece of information that you want to impress upon, whether it's the person with limb loss who's traveling, or if it's for that clinician who is just asked a question that they don't have an answer to. What's that one big takeaway you want them to?
One big takeaway that I want everyone to know is that travel is not only possible, but it's important. And if you'll humor me for a second, I will tell you about a little bit about me. I started this business because my son, who is now 13, was born prematurely while I was stationed in Jordan. He was born in a hospital in Israel and stayed there in the NICU for 6 months before we were evacuated back to the United States. He's lived with oxygen. He had a feeding tube until he was 9. He has autism, ADHD, anxiety, speech delays, all the works. And he is better when we travel. He eats, he talks to people, he inquires about things. His anxiety goes down when we challenged him to step outside of his comfort zone. And so the company that I run is here to help you do that, because you can and you should do that as much as possible. If you're new to the disability community and you think it's not possible, it is possible. And you should do it at some point, and I am here to help you. So that is my big takeaway, is travel can be transformational. And it's important, and it's possible. And whatever you need to help to make that happen, I'm here to listen. There's many people out there that want to help. So there you go.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on today and for joining me for this episode of Limitless. This has been eye-opening. It's been educational, and I really appreciate your insights and sharing your experiences with everyone.
Well, I had such a great time, and I so appreciate the invitation to come on and speak.
Absolutely. So remember, everyone, when you're ready to take that next trip, reach out to Travelable, where they are designing limitless experiences. Again, my name is Mike Verbsky, bringing you Limitless, the podcast, and we will see you next time. Have a great night.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to Limitless. If you're interested in learning more about the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and at our website, www.amputationrehab.org. I hope you enjoyed this talk today, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and information coming to you soon.